Right, we are back. Episode 11 of the Gridiron Pulse. Got both my buddies right here. We're all back. Gang's all here. Cole's got some pressing news that he needs to talk to us about, being a Steelers fan, unfortunately for him. It's the first time I've been able to say that in a while. We're just going to kick this off. How are you guys doing today?
Fantastic. Fantastic.
You know, it's good to be back.
You don't look like you're doing so hot there, bud.
I mean, there was definitely in the sports world, in my end, not the greatest with the Pickens news, obviously. But at the end of the day, it is great to be back because there were so many things I felt like I missed out on, like the Jared Curtis talk, like these NBA playoffs have been crazy, and I had what's the word, FOMO? I had FOMO watching it back with you guys because I wanted to butt in and say some things, but then I couldn't say anything. So, and then of course the day I do come back is the day that my favorite player on the Steelers is no longer on the team. So, I know you guys are probably just wondering my thoughts on that. So I just go ahead and give it. I don't know what we're doing, to be honest. I get trading him. Okay, I understand. Like, there were rumors that that was going to happen. But to do it, like, after the draft, and again, I'm going armchair GM here, and they might have done this, but logically speaking, if you know you're going to trade him, like, in this time frame, you trade him 2 weeks after the draft, why not just trade in the draft and try to trade up to get somebody, unless Derek Harmon was just their guy the whole time and they didn't feel like they needed to. I don't know, but there's no way we don't get Aaron Rodgers now. Like, that's also my next thought, because you trade for DK, and now apparently Alan Lazard is the biggest Aaron Rodgers indicator.
It's a dead giveaway.
Oh, yeah. If you trade for Alan Lazard, you're about to get Aaron Rodgers. So now we're potentially going to get Alan Lazard. I get there was, like, some behavior stuff, and, you know, his attitude always wasn't the best. And I can't really blame him. The quarterback situation has been terrible, and he's been it's just not great. And the track record of Steelers receivers over the past, like, my whole lifetime has been crazy. So I remember I went to a Pittsburgh Steelers like preseason game with my grandpa one time, and I was deciding between getting an Antonio Brown jersey and a Juju Smith-Schuster jersey. Yeah, I ended up getting the Juju Smith-Schuster jersey, which at the time was like, oh, shoot. But then I was like, it would have been really funny if I just happened to have an Antonio Brown jersey right now. Ended up getting the Juju jersey. Of course, he gets traded years later, and then I'm like, oh, now we got George Pickens. I almost got a George Pickens jersey, never pulled the trigger. He ends up getting traded too. So I don't know what to think of our receiver room. Of course, we still have DK Metcalf. We have Calvin Austin, who I like. Freiermuth had a bit of a resurgence, but honestly, like, good for George at least, because I just imagine him playing in Jerry World for the Cowboys. Seeing him with a cowboy on his star on his helmet's going to be pretty cool. Not for a Steelers fan like myself, but overall, it's just, I'm just confused at our direction at this point, because I've said this before, but I almost just want to tank. I genuinely, going into this year, we have, especially if we don't get Aaron Rodgers. If we don't get Aaron Rodgers, then we better tank. Get the losing – we're going to break the losing streak record if we have Mason Rudolph and Will Howard starting for us every single – like, just going on and off starting. Break the losing streak record. At that point, fire Tomlin and then just start over, because we're seemingly doing the same thing over and over again. We're not addressing the quarterback, and we're just running back mediocre offenses with a defense, and we're wasting T.J. Watt's entire career, so – yeah, that's all I got on that.
I do have a couple rebuttals here, some points that you brought up. So I feel like this is kind of being swept under the rug as well. Are y'all not going to re-sign TJ Watt? It's just like contract year. That was a big talk, like right at the beginning of the off season. And then, nothing's really happened at all.
That is a he's we extended. Oh wait. Oh no. That was in 2021. Okay, yeah, okay,
I think
yeah.
he's got one more year on his current deal, but he was looking for a new deal coming into the season. And then another thing is trading away Pickens. Steelers are not as attractive as a destination for Aaron Rodgers now. I mean, that took like a big hit on how the Steelers would project themselves over the other potential suitors, which at this point I don't even know who are for Aaron Rodgers. And then trading Pickens after the draft, clearly for next year's draft capital, just means they didn't think very highly of this class in general, I guess. But I mean, that's all I got. Get ready to learn Kirk Cousins, buddy.
That. So what sucks is we're kind of trending in like the Myles Garrett Brown situation where the Browns, I honestly thought it might have been in their best interest. It's going to be crazy to say to like trade a generational pass rusher, but they're so far away from contending and Myles Garrett wants a massive contract. It's almost would have been in their best interest to trade him, get a lot of draft capital and just start over. But and it's kind of trending in that way with us with TJ Watt, where it's yes, he's a great player and he's gonna end up being a Hall of Famer, but with how our quarterback situation is, even if we get Aaron Rodgers, like that's a 1 year thing, and we don't have really direction for the future, and then we sign TJ Watt to this massive contract that he's gonna want, and now our hands are tied for getting. It's just a tough situation to be in right now. And yeah, getting only a third round pick for George Pickens, love that.
Chase Claypool got better return. Second round pick.
Appreciate it, Bears. That dumb.
You got on this, Carter?
Yeah, I really don't know what the Steelers are doing. I mean, they have no quarterback. I mean, they just got DK, but if I don't know why you trade arguably one of your best players on offense in Pickens, especially getting I wouldn't say like the return, but especially like trading him after the draft just doesn't make any sense. You desperately need a quarterback. I mean, you're not. I mean, if you're gonna be a logical team, you're not gonna start Mason Rudolph or Will Howard on in week one. So I don't know why you're not addressing the quarterback need that the Steelers obviously need right now, rather than trading one of your best receivers for next year's draft capital. That it's confusing. I really don't know what the Steelers are doing. I read a report. I'm not really sure if this is entirely true or not, but apparently Mike Tomlin was like the main caveat in trading George Pickens, which if that is true, that just screams to me that he, I guess, didn't want to put up with like the behavioral stuff on the field, I guess you could say. I don't know. I really don't know like what the Steelers are thinking. I don't know what their owner is doing. I don't know what their front office is doing. They have really one glaring need, and it's the most important position on the football field, which is quarterback. But me and Jacob know someone in Atlanta who is in desperate need of a job, so hopefully you guys have a Coles around Pittsburgh so that you guys can take him off our hands. Please, we beg.
So I just pulled up y'all's draft capital for 2026 with the draft being in Pittsburgh. This is one thing that you have to look forward to, okay? 12 picks in next year's NFL draft. If that doesn't scream compensation to move up for a quarterback, I don't really know what does. Or you just stick and pick at whatever. I mean, let's say y'all get a top 15 pick for the first time in forever, it seems like. Just going what the Falcons have done, like 7-10, 6-11, something like that. Picking at like 11 or 12, y'all probably wouldn't have to give up too much to move up to 1 or 2. And then you could still have so many picks. Like, y'all got four compensatory picks for I don't even know what. But then the Pickens trade as well, then y'all picked up another draft pick in 2027. But the hometown Steelers for the draft next year could be ready to make a splash, it seems like.
That's the one thing that I am kind of okay. I can see the vision because at least, like, since we're going to be bad, we're also pairing being bad with a lot of draft capital. There are some teams that are going to be bad and don't have any draft picks. And it's just like, well, it's like the year where the Panthers, it ended up the Panthers, they traded away their first round pick to the Bears to get to draft Bryce Young. So then that rookie year of Bryce Young, where he was just terrible, but they weren't going to have the number one overall pick anyway. So we're at least not in that situation. And last thing on this receiver situation, all I'm going to say is I hope this doesn't happen to George because I'm going to be still rooting for him. The departed Steelers wide receiver for behavioral issues tends to work out for us and not the receiver. Okay, because once again, Antonio Brown.
Yep.
We all know what happened there. Juju. Now, Juju, that's another situation. Like, he did end up winning a Super Bowl with the Chiefs and, like, ended up still being, like, an okay receiver. So, like, all right, we'll call that, like, a neutral, whatever. Deontay Johnson. That dude's just been bouncing around every single team and can't stay on a team for more than 2 weeks. Chase Claypool, of course. Is he even on a team right now? Like, where is he?
Think
Is he
so.
a
He's a free
free
agent.
agent? Yeah. So at the very least, I can look to that and be okay. My guy Mike Tomlin, at least when he sees that a receiver might be like not worth keeping, he typically has a good eye for that type of stuff. So I'm at least holding on hope to that.
I will say,
Go ahead, Carter.
I will say one side note that I have about the Cowboys. If the Cowboys were to make the playoffs this year, Dak Prescott has zero excuse to be as bad as he has been in the playoffs. Now with CeeDee Lamb, George Pickens, Jake Ferguson's a reliable tight end.
Drafted Jaden
He,
Blue too from
yeah,
Texas.
Jane Blue too. Yeah, so I really don't see how Dak will have an excuse if he gets bounced first round, which I will forever root on the Cowboys' downfall. But he has zero excuses this year if the Cowboys make the playoffs for him to play as bad as he's played in the playoffs. So that's a little side note I have.
Last thing on this topic here, the receivers that you mentioned, Cole, I think we can all come to agreement that none of them are anywhere as good as George Pickens besides Antonio Brown, and they traded him in the twilight years of his career when he was really slowing down just a little bit. But if you're comparing George Pickens to Chase Claypool, that's like, what are we doing here? Deontay
Never.
Johnson, slot merchant.
I never forget Chase Claypool's amazing rookie year. That guy, one of the more fraudulent rookie years ever. Now looking back at it, but I thought he was going to be special.
I think we all did there for a split second. I mean, he's got all the tools, like the body type and all that. He's a huge, huge receiver with some speed, but just for some reason never worked out. The dude was weird. I remember the press conference saying that he's like a top three receiver in the NFL. I was like, oh, okay, according to who? Like, what are we even talking about here?
Trust me, bro.
Anyways, I think we're good to move on here. Talking about these Boston Celtics from last night, blowing another 20-point lead at home. Back-to-back games.
Ugh, yeah. Rough one last night if you're a Celtics fan. I read a stat this morning that in this series alone, the Celtics are 25 of 100 from three, which is just historic levels of just poverty shooting 3-pointers. But again, same situation as game one. Celtics were up pretty sure by like 20 plus or something, and then they went on just on this crazy scoring drought in the fourth quarter and allowed the Knicks to come back, and ultimately the Knicks won again by another defensive play by Mikal Bridges. So really, it's funny. I was watching this game and I was thinking to myself, I was like no possible way did the Celtics blow this game again. No possible way. And sure enough they did. Got to give a ton of credit to Mikal Bridges for locking down again on the last possession of the game. Crazy. It's pretty much like almost the exact same play that happened in game one that happened last night in game two. Jason Tatum, I'm sorry, bro. You're a fake superstar. You won a Mickey Mouse ring last year, and I do not respect you anymore. So, he did not play good last night. Jaylen Brown, I mean, he had 20 points, but he had a really bad field goal percentage. Jalen Brunson played all right. 23 from Josh Hart. I'll take that all day if I was a Knicks fan. Really just crazy, crazy game. I honestly can't believe that the Celtics are down 2-0 to the Knicks. I thought for sure, game one was a fluke and that the Celtics were going to win last night, but the Knicks took care of business, stole two games from the Celtics at TD Garden. So should be interesting what happens in game three. I think. I don't know if this is really a hot take, but I think game three is a must win for the Knicks, to pretty much put a ton more pressure on the Celtics. But I will be watching that game. I think it's on Saturday, so should be interesting. I'm shocked at the series so far.
Are the way you're talking about the anomaly right now, it's quite literal.
The
No.
anomaly.
But I mean, this thought just came to my mind, and my mind was just, I was wandering here for a second. Think about this. Let's say Boston goes down 3-0. Down 3-0 against a New York team. Where have we heard this before? I actually watched this documentary recently on Netflix. The Boston Red Sox 3-0 comeback against the New York Yankees in 2004. I'm just saying there's a lot of parallels here. Losing the first two at home, potentially losing the last one on the road. I'm not predicting that's going to happen, but I'm just saying keep an eye on it. But yeah, taking two in the garden is just, I mean, I always break up basketball series in terms of like, it's a series within the series. The first two on the road, if you can just win one on the road, and that for, especially as the underdog, then you won that portion of the series going home tied 1-1. To go up 2-0, I mean, it's obviously just massive for the New York Knicks, and I cannot, the street interviews after, if they win game four in New York. And you get those TikToks or those street interviews of these New Yorkers with guys dressed in Spider-Man suits chugging whatever liquor they can find on the street is going to be insane. Trying to think what else I had thoughts here. Oh, by the way, I saw on Twitter, now I don't know if this is true or not. I think this was like a Legion Hoops post or something, that the average ticket price for the game in New York is like $700. Average, okay. I don't even want to know how much those courtside seats are because I might have to take out a loan just to hear what the prices are. I mean, that's one thing first and foremost. But yeah, and it's not even like Jalen Brunson, like he didn't even play that good either. He shot like 6 of 20 or something in this
Got
game,
like
and for them to
15 or
still,
17 points. Yeah.
yeah. For them to be down 14 with like 8 minutes left and their best player doesn't even play that good, I mean, that's rough on the Celtics. So overall, that's all I got on this. But I'm just telling you, when we pull this clip, when it's 3-0 Boston or 3-0 New York, and it's this is going to a game seven, I'm gonna pull this clip. So
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I would too. So, I mean, Mikal Bridges had 0 points going into the fourth quarter, finished the game with 14, and his defensive influence as well. That's definitely the main reason why they were able to come back from such a big deficit. Carter, you mentioned Josh Hart as well. Dude had an incredible game. He's also really good on defense. And then Jalen Brunson just hitting those two free throws at the very end. He didn't need to score more than 15 or 17 points whenever the rest of his team was pulling the weight like they did last night. And just one last note on this. I was talking to one of my buddies who's a die-hard Celtics, Red Sox, Patriots, born and raised in Boston kind of guy this morning, and he says the last 3 to 4 years when the Celtics have their back against the wall, they've been the best team in the NBA, and they've responded. They're 8-2 when facing elimination since 2022, and they also had the best road record in the NBA this year. So their best mark in franchise history, they were 33-8 on the road. So he still says Celtics in seven. Obviously, that's not a surprise, but having some stats to back it up there is pretty nice.
There's only one man probably right now that's more tired than Mikal Bridges, and that might be Paul Pierce having to walk 20 miles to work this morning. 8 hours. Did y'all see that?
Yes. Yeah, I saw that on Twitter. I was confused at first. I was like, "What? Why is he walking 20 miles? Then I went back and pulled the clip. That was some funny stuff. I wonder if he actually did it, though.
Yeah, like, he anyone
can post maps on there.
I mean, he took a video of himself walking, so I don't know if bro just put out his phone, walked a few steps, and got in an Uber, but I don't know. It would actually be pretty hilarious if he actually followed up on that bet, but who knows?
Yeah, that's pretty funny. And then we had another game last night as well. Oklahoma City Thunder, after we were talking a little bit of shit about them, they put up 150. It was 149-106. I mean, there was multiple times in this game where they were up by more than 50 points. I think I turned it off at halftime, went to bed, because what a terrible game. But, I mean, there was a point at halftime, I think they were on pace to score 180. They had 88 or 89 in the first half. And then SGA finishes with 34, 4-8. Only played 30 minutes. It's basically only three quarters. I mean, their whole team just showed out like nobody's business. Shot 44% from three, 16 of 36, 91% free throws. I mean, they just owned the Nuggets in about every aspect of this game. Held Jokic to 17, and it's a pretty good recipe for success if you're playing against the Nuggets.
I mean, especially since, you know, when we saw that clip of Jokic in a bar, wherever he was, with a shooter sleeve, I thought he was just going to not wash it, just take it and just keep on going. But, I mean, the Thunder, this is like their second, like, 50 or 60-point win, it seems like. Because obviously I think they beat the Grizzlies in game one of that series by, like, 50-plus points, so...
Yep.
I will say the court that they played on, the like really dark blue that they got going with like the shirts in the stands, like I like that because obviously like their usual things like that bright, you know, that orange blue thing. But I really like what they got going there, at least for the uniform perspective. Not really much to talk about basketball wise because they just owned them. So
yeah,
we're going to see how the Nuggets bounce back because that's a tough way to go out. But like I said, if you just split 1-1 on the road, then you won that portion. So while, yes, they did come back, I still like when the Nuggets going back home to Denver. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not really too much to say with this game. It's just complete, total annihilation as soon as the ball was tipped. I mean, OKC could not miss a shot at all in the first half and the second half, too, but to be honest with you, I turned this game off at halftime because I think they were up by like 30-something. You know, just looking at the plus-minuses here is just, it's insane. Chet Holmgren was plus 34, Jalen Williams was plus 23, Isaiah Hartenstein was plus 19, Lou Dort was plus 34, and SGA was plus 51. I've never seen a plus-minus that high. Like I said, just complete, total annihilation. I mean, Denver had zero chance as soon as the first quarter ended. The OKC was in control, like, pretty much the entire game, as soon as the game started. But this game reminded me of when the Hawks played the Cavs when LeBron was still in Cleveland, and the Cavaliers broke, like, the most three-pointers made in a playoff game, I think. I forgot what year that was, but, I mean, OKC literally cannot miss from three. They could not miss a three at all this game. I mean, there's really nothing that Denver could have done. I mean, when a team's that hot, you just shake their hand and forfeit the game and go to the next one. So not really too much on this game, just OKC dominant. They've been dominant at home all year. So we shall see what Denver does in game three at in Denver.
So I actually have a fun fact here. So the highest plus minus in a single game in NBA history was achieved by Luke Mbamute against the Nuggets, actually, in 2017, and he had a plus 57.
Wow.
So, yeah, so SGA was pretty close to breaking the record, so, yeah.
Luke Mbamute, that is
that's a name I haven't heard of.
That's a... That was a crazy name. Carter, you touched on the Hawks. We're gonna kind of bring them back into the conversation here. This Cleveland-Indiana series is eerily similar to the Celtics and Knicks series as well. Away team, the underdogs, Pacers, take two in a row in Cleveland. Kind of raises the question, is Cleveland the 2015 Atlanta Hawks? Just regular season merchants like no other. Best record in the NBA, it's not even close, and get swept in the playoffs. It very well could happen. I know this Cleveland team has several injuries that we spoke about, Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, and DeAndre Hunter, which is three of their four best players not playing. I think Mobley played in game one, but I'm pretty sure him and Hunter maybe, but then they both re-injured themselves or kind of tweaked something, and they didn't play that other night. And then it kind of raises the question, I feel bad for Donovan Mitchell, dude. He had 48 points, shot almost 50% from the field on a great, just a great night overall. And the Pacers create another fourth quarter comeback, just like the Knicks have, and just take both games on the road, which is, it's kind of a big deal. I think more so in this situation, if Cleveland doesn't get healthy, this one is chalked. Like, this one is over.
Yeah, I was at the Braves game while this game was happening, but I was keeping up with it on my phone. The Cavs were up by 7, I think, with like 2.5 minutes left, and they just flat out choked. They had, according to ESPN, they had a 91% chance to win the game on their probability when they're up by 7 or whatever. But you know, Tyrese Haliburton really saw that he was named the most overrated player in the NBA and really took that personal. I mean, dude has balled out this series and last series. So, obviously, in game two, he had that clutch 3-point buzzer beater, which I was watching the highlights of it at the game on Tuesday, and just a nasty step back three right in, I think it was Ty Jerome's face, just disgusting. I guess you could say I kind of called it in the last episode. I said if Cleveland doesn't get healthy, then this is going to be a quick series for Cleveland, which they're going to get eliminated soon. So, I also said if I was a betting man, I would have bet Indiana in this series just because I'm not a full believer in the Cavs. I think, like what you said, Jacob, they really remind me of that 2015 Hawks team. So, really, the only key to the series is if the Cavs can get, you know, Mobley, DeAndre Hunter, and Darius Garland back from injury. And I think if they do, then I think Cleveland obviously has a really good chance to come back and win this series. But, you know, Indiana's hot. They're putting all the pressure on Cleveland, and it should be really interesting how Cleveland plays, especially in Game 3, which I think is a must-win for Indiana, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's talking about like the Tyrese Haliburton step back in that game winner, which that was amazing shot, but I mean, we got to talk about boxing out on the free throws. Tyrese Haliburton with the free throw gets his own miss, and you know what I mean? It all comes down to those little things right there, which is a very coaching cliche, but it's what it comes down to. So, yeah, not too much more to add on to what Carter said. I agree pretty much with everything he said. The Cavs need to get healthy. Missing Mobley and Darius Garland is going to prove to be very detrimental to them, especially with this series going back to Indiana. But Shout out to Tyrese Halliburton. He's doing his thing. And I mean, the Pacers, that they did this to the Celtics last year. I mean, they gave the Celtics a scare last year a little bit in the playoffs. I remember watching some of those games too. So, Pacers, they know how to turn it on come playoff time.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Indiana's got this series, and I'm trying to pull up some injury report, see if any of these guys are going to be back healthy, but right now they're all just listed as questionable. And then before for the other game, they were all game time decisions. So we might revisit that if we get some answers here. But we're just going to go ahead and move on to that Braves game that Carter said he was at with that walk off by Marcell Ozuna. The big bear in the bottom of the 10th. Unc Zuna from the Braves, bottom of the 10th. And then we can also touch on the Red series as a whole. Grant Holmes kind of got shelled last night, unfortunately. Would have liked a four-game sweep there, but we've got two out of three so far, and they're playing again tonight.
Tuesday night, crazy game. Not much offense, obviously, in the earlier parts of the game. It was more of a pitcher's duel between Sale and Andrew Abbott, which I was very wrong in my prediction of this game. But I did say the Braves that would win, but I did not think that they would win on a walk-off in the 10th inning. But, Chris Sale pitched amazing. It's a shame that, the offense left so many runners on base while he was still in the game, which has been a constant theme of the Braves this year with the struggles with runners in scoring position. And then, bullpen came, shut it down. Theisbel Hernandez, I don't even think he pitched a bad game, even though he gave up the one run in the 8th inning. And then, Money Mike had the game-tying double. I learned that Stuart Fairchild is extremely fast. I don't know how he scored from first to home, but I thought he was going to be out by a long shot. But I'm glad that he's on our team specifically just for a pinch runner, kind of like how Eli White was before he started.
Before he turned into the best player in baseball, by the way.
Eli White, the GOAT. But yeah, Money Mike. I think that's a really big confidence bat at bat for him. He's been struggling a ton this year. He's not walking. He's striking out a bunch. He's grounding out. He's not really getting too many hits. So I'm glad that it was him that had that game tying RBI double. And then 10th inning, Iglesias goes 1-2-3 in the 10th inning. Shutting out the Reds doesn't prevent them from getting that runner from second home. And then, like you said, Jacob, the big bear with the walk-off single won me a little bit of money, so that was nice. But again, just when this Braves team, like when the offense is clicking, the whole lineup clicks. So, pitching has been great. I think really it's just been the constant issue for this whole year. It's just the offense will do great in a couple of games, and then they'll go ice cold. And your pitching can only do so much. I mean, if you ask the Braves from last year, 2 years ago when they went to the playoffs and were early exits, their offense completely shut down, and their pitching carried them, especially last year. But good win for the Braves on Tuesday. Unfortunately, last night they got the loss. Grant Holmes coming off of that really good outing against the Dodgers. He kind of got shelled last night. Had 7 hits, 4 runs, 5 Ks, 1 walk. I mean, when you have as good of a lineup as the Braves do, when they're really clicking, that really shouldn't have been an issue. But with the Braves offense being as inconsistent as it is, it's considered a giant hole. Hunter Green, I hope he's all right. He exited last night with an injury. He's probably one of the best young pitchers in baseball. I think he's definitely going to get some Cy Young votes this year. He's dominant. Really good pitcher for the Reds. And Grant Holmes got shelled. The bullpen again last night was great. They didn't give up any more runs to the Reds. They shut them down. The Braves made a little bit of a comeback. They only lost 4-3 when they were down 4-0. Again, I'm gonna keep harping on this. It's the same. It's just gonna be the same issues with this team until the offense figures it out, and it's runners in scoring position, or hitting with guys on base. It's been the Achilles heel of this team this year. So again, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a bad loss because I don't think the Reds are as bad as anyone says that they are. I think they're a decent team, but tough one last night. But winning the series, that's really all I care about, winning the series. So tonight is the final game of the 4-game stretch. So we shall see if we win this one tonight. So.
Yeah, and so you mentioned tonight we have that game, got Schwellenbach on the mound against Lodolo. And then, all right, so these next few series coming up, this is a portion of our schedule where we need to like take 2 out of 3 or get some sweeps coming up. So obviously we have the last game of the series against the Reds tonight. Then we go into a 3-game series against the Pirates. Would love to take at least 2 out of 3, maybe a sweep there. Then we go Nationals, then we go Red Sox, then we go Nationals again until we finally play the Padres and Phillies in back-to-back series. So these next couple series, this needs to be the portion of our schedule where we look up come May 23rd, where we go into San Diego and it's like, oh my gosh, the Braves, they're first in their division again. How in the heck did they started like 0-15? So yeah, that's what I hope for moving forward.
Yeah, I would love to take this one tonight with Schwellenbach on the mound, get a 3-1 series over the Reds, and then I was just looking at the pitching matchups for the weekend series versus the Pirates. We dodge Paul Skenes. So, win all three. Sweep the Pirates. They're not good. They are
Dude,
not
we
good at all.
missed.
12-26 right now. They're last in their division. They Even when Paul Skenes does seem to pitch, they don't put up enough runs. They're kind of struggling with the same thing that we do. Either their pitching is on and their hitting is off, or vice versa. So yeah, sweep this weekend versus the Pirates would likely, it would put us above 500 for the first time all season, and then have us on that trajectory, like Cole said, Nationals, Red Sox, and the Nationals again. I heard that it sounds like we're going to get to play against Mike Soroka in that first National Series. He's going to get the start in one of those games. I think the first one I keep seeing. That'll be interesting to see for sure. He was obviously a project that didn't really work out for the Braves, but not for any like performance reasons. I mean, they were performance based, but they were all injury bugs. Like he could not stay healthy for the life of him. Which obviously sucks for him, but glad to see that he's found his footing somewhere else. It would just be nice to put up like 7 on his noggin on, I think Monday is when we play him. So, yeah, that would be nice for sure. We can go ahead and move on to
Before
tonight. What's that?
we move on, I have to ask, did you mean to use that pun right there? You hope Mike Soroka finds his footing? Because that's messed up. That is
I actually
messed
didn't
up.
mean to, but yeah, going back, looking at the Achilles tears, that might have not been the nicest thing to say.
That's disgusting.
He's on a division rival now, dude. Pop off. All right, we got Timberwolves, Golden State Warriors tonight. Ant-Man, please do something. For the love of God, man. He ended up with 23 in the first game, but he had 1 point at halftime. They were seemingly down big enough to where they weren't going to come back. Thought they might have some magic like the Knicks and the Pacers, but it just wasn't there. Golden State was just locked down defensively, even without Curry. Curry left at the intermission between the first and second quarter. He's got a grade 1 hamstring strain, so he's going to be out for about a week, maybe 10 days. So it looks like he's going to be out for games 2, 3, and 4, and then maybe back for games 5 and 6. It would be really beneficial for the Timberwolves if they took obviously all three while the best player on the other team is hurt. But I feel like taking 2 out of 3 would be Nice, but tonight's a must win. They're at home. Like we said, I like to do the thing where you kind of break up the playoff series. If you can take one at, if you're the underdog away team, if you can take one of those first two, that's a win for you. And then just being fans of the home team on this one, just even back the series and then take one at Golden State and just kind of bring it back to where it flip-flops to home away, home away, home away. I definitely think they can do it. They got a talented enough team, but the Warriors just seemingly, they're like the Mighty Mites out there defensively. They're shorter at every single position, and they're out rebounding and out defending the Timberwolves in just about every facet of the game. Buddy Hield put the clamps on Anthony Edwards for that first game, and his press conferences with Jimmy Butler are just pure comedy. Dude, just he doesn't speak English, first of all. His teeth get in the way of every single word that he has to say. I think it's hilarious. Not crapping on Buddy Hield in any way. He's clearly just one of the glue guys that everyone's friends with, everyone laughs at, comes out with the wrong shorts for game one, and then just puts out another gem. He had 24 points. He's great on defense, locking up Ant-Man. That's really all I got for this series. What do y'all think?
So we talk about the Celtics and how they were 25 for 100 from three. Was it the first two games of the series or something like that?
Yep.
Not too far behind them. Now this is still considerably behind them in the bad 3-point shooting, but the Timberwolves also 12 of 76 from three. I'm sure we all saw the clip of Anthony Edwards being like
I
looking
know,
like
dude. The Timberwolves set that record and the Celtics broke it last night.
Yeah, so that is like it's got to be bound to flip a little bit. Like I just don't think they can shoot that bad for that long. So yeah, definitely want to see the Timberwolves bounce back here and get a dub. They're 10.5 point favorites tonight against the Warriors. So
No Steph Curry. That's why.
okay, that makes sense. Okay, well then, yeah, then you better win this game or else you have no business winning this series.
Yeah, I already know if the Timberwolves are to win the series, you know, all these NBA fans are like, oh, like Mickey Mouse series win, no Curry, Mickey Mouse. But I mean you could say you know, if Minnesota doesn't win this series, then it's a choke without Steph Curry. I mean, greatest shooter ever is out or pretty much going to be almost out for this whole series. So, like you guys said, I think game two is a must win. You have to take advantage, you know, being at home. Got to even this series up. I think Minnesota. If I were to make a prediction, I think Minnesota should win this game tonight. I think, you know, Anthony Edwards didn't have a great game in game one. I think, you know, me personally, I think he needs to start going more downhill towards the basket and trying to stop shooting so many threes, just because he's a freak of an athlete. So I think he's at his best when he goes downhill to the basket. I mean, he makes all these acrobatic layups, posterizes people. You know, I mean, he's still a good 3-point shooter, but he's been struggling, especially these playoffs. So, you know, if Ant starts going more downhill towards the basket, you know, dishing it out to Julius Randle, who's been great this playoff series. You know, Rudy Gobert when he wants to, you know, show up on offense. Jaden McDaniels, I think he's been really good these playoffs. So, I am going to predict that the Timberwolves even the series up. I think obviously they're gonna have a way better shooting game than game one. I think that was probably more of, you know, having a little bit too much rest, because I think, you know, with the Warriors going to game seven with the Rockets, I think that was more of a, you know, kind of a an ice cold game. I don't think that's going to happen twice. So give me the Timberwolves tonight.
Yeah, I think we all definitely want to see the Timberwolves take one tonight. I want to see a huge game from Ant. Show me one of those 43-point games that you had against the Lakers. Like, that was awesome and super fun to watch. That's really all the basketball talk we have on the agenda for today. This one's kind of more of a Falcons fan-centered topic, but rookie numbers came out yesterday. Jalen Walker keeps 11 from Georgia, and then James Pierce keeps 27 from Tennessee. I kind of like the 27. I know it's a bit odd for a defensive lineman, but it's unique, and I think it's cool. It's definitely one that he can make his own, as opposed to number 11, who was obviously worn by one of the greatest players in franchise history. But as much of the world has learned for these past couple of days, the Falcons don't retire numbers. Just period, point blank. They induct people into the Ring of Honor, which Julio still hasn't been inducted into the Ring of Honor. There is clearly no love lost between Arthur Blank and Julio Jones. I think it'll eventually happen for sure. Do I think they should start retiring numbers? Yeah, probably. I think it should be 11 and 2, shouldn't be worn again, but for right now, that's not going to happen. And we also figured out that we are not changing jerseys until next year, which sucks because we have one of the worst jersey combinations in the NFL with by far one of the best color schemes. I mean, you can't beat red, black, and white, first of all. I think we all know that to be a fact. And then just, I don't understand how you can screw up NFL jerseys that bad. Like, that is someone's job, is to make the jerseys. And I see mock-ups on Twitter all the time. I know y'all both see the same thing. Every single mock-up on Twitter of Falcons' potential jersey combinations are just like leaps and bounds better than anything that we've worn for the past 10 years. Even our last jersey combinations, kind of the more, I guess you call them throwback Falcons now, which makes us sound old, but that's true. They weren't the best. Like every single one made by some rando with a graphics application on his computer that I see on Twitter is just so much better. And our jerseys are hideous. That's why I'm not buying jerseys. Haven't. I got gifted a Todd Gurley number 21 jersey like you have, Carter, just because it was my favorite player on my favorite team in the NFL. It's ugly and I never wear it. So I'm just going to leave that at that.
I'm going to say a little bit of a hot take. I don't think the Falcons jerseys are that bad. I think they're a lot better in person. I think they're a lot better in person. But the gradients, though, those are hideous. But, I
The
think.
black is the best one. I hate the whites and the gradient.
I don't mind the whites. I think they're all right, but the blacks are definitely cool. But yeah, so Jalen Walker keeps number 11, and then James Pierce keeps his college number 27, which is not worn anymore by Richie Grant. I am so happy you're off my team.
Well, I'm just glad to see Jalen Walker is retaining his aura with his jersey number. That's the most important thing because there are so many rookies where they're getting their numbers, and I'm just like, I wouldn't have drafted him if I had known like that was the jersey number he's going to wear, aka Matthew Golden. He's wearing number 22 for the Packers.
That's I hate that.
I know.
It's
It's like
great.
it's gi he's giving off like. I mean, I know like Rashid Shaheed wears 22 for the Saints, but like I just don't look at it. It literally alters what I think of you as a player, which I know it shouldn't, but it's like Rashid Shaheed, I see him as like a gadget player because he wears 20s as his jersey number. So now I'm going to just see Matthew Golden as that. But no, good for Jalen Walker keeping that jersey number. And yeah, speaking of the Julio Jones thing, I was actually pulling this up. NL Football, the great Twitter account that we all know of.
God.
The Falcons have given rookie pass rusher Jalen Walker the number 11. The greatest player in team history, Julio Jones, donned the number 11 for many years. Is this disrespectful to Julio Jones? In all caps. So the discourse is already starting, so you guys
Oh,
can have
yeah.
that.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up. Like, we don't
Yeah.
retire fingers. That's just like, that's a known thing, at least should be, by Falcons Twitter. Like, Falcons fans know that. We have a Ring of Honor for a reason. Keep the numbers open. And Carter just keeps entering and leaving. So we're just going to continue on like nothing is happening. We got Xavier Watts wearing number 31. I kind of like that for safety. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then Billy Bowman Jr., 33. And then the defensive lineman that, or the offensive lineman that we drafted in the seventh round, Jack Nelson, 69.
Is
Nice.
that what is it the
Sorry
dude
about
from
that, y'all.
Wisconsin,
My
or am I
internet
thinking
just
of
went out,
somebody else?
so.
Who, where's
Yes,
Wisconsin?
that's the Wisconsin guy.
Yeah, from that just seems right for a Wisconsin guy too. So, were there any other? Oh, I wonder what. Let me look at the Steelers rookie numbers. Steelers rookie
They
jersey.
might not have come out yet because I know the Falcons just came out yesterday, and I've seen a bunch of other
Ooh.
teams. You
Okay,
got
here
them?
we go. So we got this. Derek Harmon will wear number 99.
Nice.
Like Jack Sawyer will wear number 33. Yaya
Was he 30?
Black.
I think he was 33 in college.
I think so, Yaya Black 78. Where what's Caleb Johnson gonna be wearing? I need to know this. Let's see. Where is K? Will Howard's wearing number 18. Caleb Johnson number 20. Okay, so no crazy numbers here.
I kind of like that. I think he's probably going to be y'all's lead back, right? Jalen Warren's more of a gadget, speed
Yeah,
pass.
let me look.
Caleb Johnson
Steelers
was clearly the Najee replacement.
back
Sorry about that,
depth
y'all.
chart.
My internet just went out for a second, so I couldn't hear anything that y'all were saying.
You're good.
All good, brother. So looking at our running back depth chart right now, it currently has Jaylen Warren, Caleb Johnson, Kenneth Gainwell, and Cordarrelle Patterson.
Falcons legend.
Arthur Smith is never gonna let Cordarrelle Patterson walk. That is his guy. Either that or he's got some type of dirt on him or something.
You guys still have the greatest tight end of all time, Mykal Pruitt?
No, I don't think we do.
Oh.
No, we have Freiermuth, Darnell, Connor Hayward, and Donald Parham. I did not know he was on the Steelers.
Dude, I saw something on Twitter this
Sad
morning
boy.
that y'all could run the greatest Arthur Smith set in the world. He has always wanted to do this. As a Falcons fan, just trust me on this. Five tight ends, one running back, or no running backs, 50 personnel. Have DK Metcalf be that end of line tight end because he's like the biggest receiver in the NFL. I think it could work.
I mean, oh, and I forgot we got Robert Woods. Okay, never mind. Trading George Pickens is okay. We got Robert Woods.
Bobby Trees coming in year 15.
Robert Woods, Scotty Miller, Calvin Austin, Ben Skowronek, and
Adam Thielen.
Roman Wilson. Dude, we're fine. We're fine, bro.
Steelers are expecting a big jump from year two, Roman Wilson.
Are
No,
we gonna bring anything? I don't think he played at all last year.
I don't think he did either. He was injured the entire year.
speaking of
Something happened.
that, I have a little side note. I know it's the off season when I see another Falcons coach saying that they think that Kyle Pitts is projected to have a big year this year. Going on 4 straight years of saying the same stuff every off season, and it never happens. So we are officially in off season, boys.
And you're still going to be drafting him in the first round in fantasy.
No. I learned my
Just
lesson
not
last
first
year.
round.
Too much. I had him like that second or third year, whichever year was his absolute worst. I drafted him like the third or fourth round. I was just like, good Lord, never again. But this year,
It's different, bro.
it's
It's
different this year.
different.
I
It's
mean, he's
different this
going
year.
into what, year what?
Year
Four?
five, we picked
Five.
up
Year five. Hey, this
picked up
is.
his fifth year option. This is a contract year.
You know what they say, year five is always the one. It's always year five. That's what they say.
At least we saw some kind of improvement last year. I think statistically he had a second best year last year. And then having continuity at the quarterback position is always going to help. He popped off in those first three or four games with Cousins, and then you can tell Penix kind of threw him off, and then Kirk throwing his arm out and then not telling anyone obviously threw him off a little bit because he wasn't able to push the ball more than 15 yards down the field, which was incredibly annoying to watch as a fan of the team. But yeah, that's the Kyle Pitts saga. Year five, it's the one. Zach Robinson, offensive continuity. I saw a thing with Michael Penix last night. That's his golfing buddy. Dude, we know something about that. You gotta have continuity throughout the golfing buddies.
Do you think how good do we think Michael Penix and Kyle Pitts are at golf, if you had to guess?
I have to say, probably pretty bad.
I don't know. I have a sneaky feeling that Penix has a buttery swing. I don't know why.
I know this interview that I watched with him last night, he's like, I'm just starting, like
Oh, never
getting
mind.
into it and everything like that. But I mean, natural athlete, clearly, lefty, which I don't know. It's harder to find clubs. That's all I really know about lefties playing golf.
Speaking of it being the off season, this is another key off season indicator. When you get a random John Rothstein Twitter notification saying Northwestern will host Boston University on Friday, November 7th.
We sleep in
What?
May. What?
Okay.
If it
Like
wasn't John
all
Rothstein, I would say what sport?
sounds like hockey, low key, but you gotta give it to him, man. That dude, I've never seen someone who loves college basketball more than
It's
that
May,
guy.
dude. He should be asleep. What is he
I
doing?
know what it's he sleeps in May. What?
That's the last tweet that I saw from him. It was like May 1st, and it was just like him like this.
Some of his funniest tweets are whenever someone like responds to him like hey John, like why are you not tweeting about the Super Bowl, and then he'll just say something about college basketball. I always think those are the funniest tweets.
Yeah, those are good. I guess the last thing we can kind of transition to over here, Georgia baseball has got a big series this upcoming weekend with Alabama. We're playing them Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I believe it's at home. I'm checking. I know I looked at this before, but I didn't check if it was home or away.
How do we feel about Wes Johnson's comments on the Mississippi State job?
It's away at Bama. I think he was being truthful, only because like he's actually committed to the university and they've seemingly committed to him. They've bought in so much with all the training facilities being like the best that money can buy now from like not even having training facilities earlier. They've chosen or they've showed that they've been willing to invest in a coach like him. And it seems like he obviously said what he was supposed to say in the interview. He wasn't super convincing, but I don't know. When you just look at it, why would you want to live in Starkville? Why would anyone want to live in Starkville?
I will not venture into Starkville, let's just say that. That was his direct quote, so.
I don't blame you, dude. That would be my response.
I don't think he'll leave just because basically the school has built the program around him, upgrading the facilities and stuff. So I just think it'd be dumb for him to leave. But I don't know. Coaches have said that before, and then they'll leave in the off season. So we'll see. But I don't think so.
It's kind of weird with him, though, too, with him being this so-called pitching guru. We've put up 25 runs a game is the only reason why we've been good. Like, that's clearly not pitching. It's, the average score to our games has to be like 12-9 or something crazy like that. Like, for a baseball game, that's like wild.
Hey, we held the powerhouse Missouri Tigers to 2 runs in every single game this weekend. So I'd say our pitching's pretty good.
I'd say the Missouri Tigers are 0-24 in SEC play. That might have something to do with it. I don't know. It's kind of weird.
This series should be interesting. Alabama is not bad in one sport, which pisses me off to no end, but I think it should be interesting. I think to keep that regional, I think Georgia should take at least like two or three. I think just to keep that regional, if they're still in relative distance away from it. Also, I just want to say, does Alabama like ever come to Athens for any sport ever? Like, I can't tell you the last time Alabama has ever came to Athens for any sport.
They scared, dude.
Cowards over there in Tuscaloosa.
They're gonna find out this year in college football, dude. Oh my God, they're gonna find out. We're gonna beat them so bad. It's going to be unreal. It's gonna be like TCU, Georgia. I was watching highlights from that game this morning. Just came up on my feed. I was like, dude, I don't think we appreciated this as much as we should have in real time. Like, that being a national championship game and just pure murder. Nothing.
Well, because about halfway through the second quarter, we were coordinating if we were about to go downtown at halftime. That's probably why, because we were too busy planning on what we were going to do to celebrate the second quarter.
I am glad that we decided to wait till the end of the game to go, but still, definitely noteworthy that we could have in the first quarter.
I think I started celebrating like the third quarter.
Yeah, I mean, it was over. We were getting freshmen with two touchdowns, two sacks. I mean,
it's a travesty.
Those teams were unbelievable.
It's a travesty that Stetson still doesn't have a statue yet.
I know.
Try the number.
Yeah, I saw a couple off-season clips of Stetson yesterday, I think. It's looking good. Got to win that second string quarterback job in the Rams. I heard that's why they haven't taken a quarterback in the past two classes, because they were like, they wouldn't beat out Stetson Bennett. So that was like their GM or Sean McVay said that.
Yeah, I have a big beef with the Rams right now, so I hope Jimmy G loses his job, but probably not. But I don't know, we'll see. I thought for sure they were going to take maybe Bill Rowe in this draft. If that was the case, I would think Stetson would be trying to go to another team, but thankfully not, because I think once given him a shot, I think he'll do pretty good.
This year's preseason is going to be massive for him, because I guarantee they're going to give him almost every single snap. So
no reason to throw
better.
Jimmy G.
I mean,
out
we
there.
Know what Jimmy G is. We know he's like,
dude. If we just give Jimmy G a few more preseason reps, maybe we can figure it out.
It's like he hasn't played
the Rams
6 years in college. Like we know this guy can be great. He's just a little up in his own head sometimes, which we can all get like that. All right, that's going to do it. This has been episode 11 of the Gridiron Pulse. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe, share us on socials. We will be back with you next week.